Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we are at the summit of zero trust. We've explored previous stages focusing on manual versus automation, network segmentation, identity, the importance of strategic integration of leadership and IT. So today we're joined by Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity and vCISO. So welcome to the summit of zero trust. Is there anything you want to cover before we dive in? Is there anything you want to review? Anything you feel really important to touch on before we talk optimal?
I just wanted to start off by saying, how's the weather down there? Because we're... go ahead, Nate.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to do a quick recap. So Aria, you touched very, very briefly on that. The last stage that we talked about, just to bring you up to speed, was implementing lots and lots of automation. And then I think I was asked the question about what's the quick glimpse of what optimal looks like. And I think I said continuous validation. So we moved from automation to now everything, every transaction is going to be evaluated. So there's a glimpse of where you were, and now we're at the summit, and what you get to look forward to this discussion. And Todd, sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, that was more or less what I was going to do too, was just that real brief overview. I mean, Ariel and Nate covered a ton of it, so we probably won't need to deal with it a whole lot, but we've just been kind of slowly building up, and a lot of organizations have already started to do that. There are bits and pieces that are probably being adopted. Obviously, you're going to be using MFA. You're probably starting to see people starting to do phish-resistant MFA and so forth, which are great. Those things are advanced, and it is just kind of slowly getting to where we're going. The optimal, we were chatting a little bit earlier today about what this looks like, and I saw it's kind of like a pipe dream, because to me, it always feels like it's just slightly out of reach, which it should always be, right? We're always going to try to strive for a little bit better, and no matter how much we do, there's going to be the next thing that's going to go, okay, but did you consider this? Did you consider that? Technology is ever-changing, and so this goal for us will be as well. But it is great to see how far along we've come, and then how we're going to help a lot of organizations get moving a little bit further along this path as well.
Yeah, I know we want to jump in, but again, kind of referencing a conversation we had earlier, I thought it was so interesting, Todd, you mentioned, we won't call out the conference, but a conference where this wasn't even a conversation. You know, this is so far up there and so many steps to take to get to this optimal stage that people weren't really talking about it. When do you think this will be a conversation at conferences, in businesses, talking about zero trust in this optimal stage?
I'll start, but I think Nate's got a lot of good stuff to throw onto this too, because we're talking about this a little bit before we started recording. It depends on the industry that you're in. So for cybersecurity, myself and Nate in particular, we're talking about it all the time. You go to conferences, you're going to hear about it. It's going to be something that's just common vernacular that's going on. Most business industries, I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past too, is depending on what industry is and where their appetite is, a lot of companies are not terribly super excited about adopting security tools. There is the conversation about costs and friction and so forth, which we've talked about a ton in our podcast, but you're not seeing it in everyday conversation. I'm just going to do a little bit of an analogy. A handful of years ago, I think it were about 3 or 4 years ago, at CIT, we had said antivirus really has gone the way of the dodo. It just hasn't kept up with the world. And as such, we're going to move to EDR, and we're just going to help our customers make that transition. And of course, we screened it from the top of the mountain up here at Optimal. But we were saying it's time, right? It's time. What we're trying to get across with this is, in my opinion, zero trust, it's time. And as I mentioned, a lot of people are actually potentially already on the path up the mountain. They just don't realize that they are. So when is it going to happen? It's starting to happen. It's just been a little bit more organic, which is an old phrase that's very trendy that I'll try not to use again. But before you really, really see it, it'll probably be a couple more years, but I'll let Nate jump in too.
Yeah. So there's probably going to be a delay when we recorded this to when it comes out. But just last week, I came back from one of the world's biggest security conferences, and I can tell you, they've already been talking about this for years. It was one of the, I don't even want to say it was the hot topic right now. some of these big conferences are already established, you already need to do this. Now they're more in the to the breakout sessions. And we're talking about nation state actors and artificial intelligence or machine learning or whatever terms you want to use to augment the capabilities of some of this stuff. So the main thing is that, to Todd's point, is it's going to depend on the industry. So if you look at the enterprise, it's already been a conversation for a long, long time because they had the money to be able to support those high-end tools. As the technology becomes cheaper and cheaper, we start to see that migrate down to the, you know, medium and large businesses, all the way down to the SMB space, the small and medium businesses. So we're seeing that really become available at a low cost, essentially, these days. But Zero Trust, it's nothing new, right? CIT, we've been talking about it for years. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, they released a Zero Trust architecture back in 2020. There was an executive order back in 2021 for the government saying, you need to move to all this, and with some pretty tight deadlines. So typically, we always joke around that the government moves slow, but when it comes to cybersecurity, they're often outpacing a lot of these small businesses. So it, yeah, if you're just hearing about Zero Trust for the first time, you skipped over the first three podcasts here. You came to this one.
Yeah.
And then also the government is 3 years at least ahead of you at this point.
Welcome to the deep end. Yeah. One brief thing before we move on is, as Nate was talking, it kind of helped me make the connection in my head is when you look at enterprise used, and I really don't love this term, but most people know what it is at this point, is they started the digital transformation process probably about a decade to go in earnest, and that is kind of through. They're done. They're through that piece. And if you look at digital transformation, and what I'm kind of broadly speaking to is you're seeing that transition of getting off of legacy equipment, finding ways to use tools to help the business grow and meet their objectives. In a lot of cases, platforms as a service, infrastructure as a service, software as a service has really taken a foothold there. The SMB market, small and mid-sized organizations, they tend to lag about that 10 to 15 years, and you're starting to see that big uptick. And it's probably why you're seeing people start to gravitate to our podcast in general, is that's happening, right? That digital transformation or that process of starting to mature your organization is happening now. And as that's happening, building the true infrastructure that supports it, in this case, I'm referring to cybersecurity, how is that baked into what you're doing going forward is incredibly important. So if you're enterprise, you probably have a lot in place. If you're SMB, you're starting to figure it out, but you need to kind of consider this as a whole.
For sure. On our previous podcasts, we explored these pillars, if that's the right term, our identity, devices, networks, applications, data. What's the easiest entry point do each of you feel coming from the previous stage into this one? Is it data? Is it identity?
My favorite, identity. So I'm taking it. The reason why is is everyone has an account, right? There's not really new technology that you necessarily have to apply. It's built into these pieces of software, your identity providers. It's going to depend on the licensing that you have. Again, the higher you up you go on this Zero Trust chain, the more licensing you're going to have, but the more features that you're going to get at the same time. So I'm just going to go pick on two different ones just because they are kind of the identity leaders in this space, is Okta and then Microsoft. And so Okta, they really recently released a feature called ASN binding, which just means contextual analysis and mapping, which, so what this means is if I'm currently logged into the Okta admin portal and I'm currently connected to my home. Now, let's say I quick do a hotspot over to my mobile phone and it connects into Chicago. It's going to break that session and force me to re-authenticate. And because it doesn't trust what, you know, there's something called cookie hijacking, right? Is you take a cookie, you can log in somewhere else. This is becoming one of the biggest threats today, is session hijacking, is someone logs in, they grab the key to that website, right? It's how you say, just go back to the website and you're still logged in. It's using those cookies essentially. You can steal those and log in somewhere else with never having to authenticate again. So these providers are now doing this continuous analysis of that session. And if something changes, it forces a reauthentication. Microsoft does something as well. I'm totally blanking on the name of it now. But it's a real-time analysis. I think it's called continuous validation, if I remember correctly. So that's going to be up in those premium licenses of Microsoft. But I can pretty much guarantee most of the people listening to this have some type of Microsoft account. And so now you need to start taking a look at the more advanced identity features within there rather than just prompting for multi-factor and hoping that it's good enough. Because we see it from time to time again. Someone goes to a malicious website, they log in, they give up their multi-factor code, someone steals that cookie and logs in, and they never have to prompt again. And that session stays open. By default, I think it's 90 days. So continuous validation is going to be the big thing there. Please take a look at the licensing. I know there's a lot of our customers that have been moving up to the premium licenses of Microsoft. If you are still down on some of the basic licensing, you don't get that features.
The question was, what's the easiest part to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the easiest entry point?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the easiest because I think identity is hard. And I say that because there is so much legacy stuff built into Microsoft and everybody's just been using it forever. So again, one of our previous conversations, we were talking about NTLM as an authentication process that used to work. That's from 1993 from Windows 95. I mean, it's old technology, and you have to go through ripping all that stuff up and modernizing it. So I'm mostly playing devil's advocate here. I'll say devices is the easiest one. I agree. Whether it's easy or not, you have to start at identity. It's the core of the whole thing. If you can't identify everything, the people, the tools, the network, et cetera, you're doomed. So it is where you absolutely have to start. I just use devices because I think most people kind of get devices, right? You typically, historically, if you had your antiviruses, we talked a lot about your endpoint detections. So you're looking at a lot of the devices that are on there, and people have really become very much aware of IoT devices as well. Some OT, I don't think we see it nearly as much as people protecting their OT is segmenting it, but Operation Technologies was OT. So I think the concept behind protecting the device itself is pretty common knowledge. And then again, as you look at how people deal with their day in and day out, most people have, I was going to pick up my phone, but not everybody's on video. Everybody's got mobile devices. And by default, your Microsofts, your Googles, your Apple, they're all going to encrypt devices by default as well. So you already have a very strong encryption process in place too. I would say that's one of the larger areas to do it. Now, there's a lot more when we get to this optimal level that you have to do for this continuous and automation piece, right? Continuously validating it is what we think it is. It's where it's supposed to be. It is actually updated. It's not jailbroken, so on and so forth. There is still a lot that you need to do to jump up to the next level. But I'll say, generally speaking, I think devices is the easiest step, but it's not the linchpin.
That's because That's because Todd delegates all the user complaints to me.
I agree. It's identity.
On the device level, you're going to face user friction because as you tighten up those devices, you're starting to limit some of the capabilities that you just gave the freedom of the end users. Whereas on the identity side, you're typically making it easier for them by saying, let me reduce another password for you to memorize. Let me, make it easier to log into an application while still providing the increased security. So I like mine on the identity side because I feel more like the good guy. If Todd took over all the support calls on the device side, I think he'd come hang out with me on identity later on.
I said I was playing devil's advocate.
The tools are easier to implement on the device side. I will say that. So.
Yeah, and we have boiled the frogs long enough that most people do kind of go, okay, I get it. It's going to be a little bit harder to do my job. I do think identity can be difficult too, and you're right. There is a lot of the stuff that's coming along definitely is improving it. But I will say, this will be for our IT crowd. identity makes the admin job considerably easier when you start to get into a lot of the stuff that we've talked about in previous ones, where you get into automations, which would be rule-based access, onboarding, offboarding. You simplify your life dramatically. So if there's no other reason to pay attention to Zero Trust as an admin, you want to, because your life get easier.
Yeah.
And then I make it harder by giving you device encryption.
So just continuing the device conversation then, one of the big things up in this optimal level is, again, continuous risk evaluation of your devices when they're granting access to applications. And so what does that look like, right? Does, we know that it has, you know, Windows patches. We know that there's the latest versions of, you know, Windows or Mac. I'm going to just assume Windows for this conversation, that Windows is on the latest version, right? Because there's security vulnerabilities that are getting patched in those older versions. Whether or not it's BitLocker, you know, the drive encryption, whether or not it has some type of EDR solution running on it. And then maybe, is it running through an MDM solution and you're pushing out some type of certificate from that MDM solution? These are all contextual items that you can evaluate against. So let's say you're trying to log in. We have a whole, I think we have a whole podcast about killing the VPN, because we hate VPNs these days. But so if you go talk about that with the Zero Trust Network Access solutions, there's rule sets within there that you can say, evaluate all these different contextual points of a device, plus the identity of the user coming in through there. And if something isn't evaluated properly, you know, maybe it fell behind on security patches. Maybe it's the device became unencrypted for some reason. Maybe the EDR agent is actually stopped, right? So it's unprotected. These are things you can check against before granting access to critical resources. So those are the really fun things and stuff that CIT does as well already today. But at that point, to the user experience, as long as everything is checked out normal, and again, because there's so much automation, the admin overhead is quite low for that, is to the end user, they're just accessing the resources. They don't need a VPN. They don't need a necessarily multi-factor. And if something doesn't get evaluated properly, it still breaks the connection. Or maybe it's a live session, something changed, and then it breaks the session. So really, really cool stuff that you can do. That this is the stuff that makes me excited in security, right? And identity.
Yeah. So all of these.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I had another question. So if you wanted to. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Ask your question. I was just going to say, I don't really have a lot to add to devices. I thought that was covered pretty well. So go ahead and ask your question.
So all of these pillars are very integrated, obviously. When you're doing one, then it feeds into the other. But is there something that lags behind is the wrong phrase, but something that's sort of at the end when you, that's the last pillar that you would approach. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Or at least I think it does. I don't know if I would say, what's the thing that's naturally going to come last, if you will, like if you're going
Thank
for
you.
Prioritization.
Yes.
It's all important, which is kind of why we're building it. We're kind of stacking it up and getting to a higher level. I don't know that I would say this is less important, but I would say I think where you would see the most lagging, if you will, or the laggards, is it typically, in my opinion, is going to be on the data layer. And the reason being is, in my experience, what happens, I'll use a little bit of background here, so I'm sorry, I'll back up just a hair. When you're looking at the world of IT, the person that's being the IT manager, the administrator, whomever, they're the custodians of the data. All they're doing is doing what other people tell them. So if you're in accounting, you're the owner of the accounting data. If you're in HR, you're the owner of the HR data, and you're putting your trust into the IT admin. Well, the IT admin can only do what they're told, quite frankly. They don't know who should have access, who should have read access, who should have write access. How critical is it? So when you're looking at data, you got to go through a lot of steps to make sure you're doing all the right things. And because you're so reliant on the entire organization, it typically ends up being the slowest process in the process of getting up to this kind of level. There's just so much that goes into it, and you've got to get that buy-in across the organization that slows you down the most.
Yeah. I'd probably agree with Todd. The quick answer I was going to have was more the network side of things, and just because hardware, right? Organizations don't tend to like to swap out hardware too often, especially if you're in a highly regulated, sensitive area, maybe prone to, I don't want to say glitches, but the timeliness of everything could cause major impacts. So think like airlines, right? You're flying 40-year-old planes, manufacturing. Maybe that manufacturing system has been in place untouched for 30 years and you don't want to touch it because it's making you money. So in those cases, I'd say that's a big issue, right? Because I'm not going to go too deep into it, but when we're talking about network security and cryptographic protocols, the big organizations are already talking about quantum encryption and how do you protect today's data from tomorrow's threat, right? Is as quantum computers are getting stronger and stronger, if someone started listening and capturing all your data today, eventually a quantum computer is going to break it. Now, we tend to operate down in the small, medium businesses, so the risk is quite low. But those are the things to at least consider and what these larger enterprises are already thinking about. But then to Todd's point, for the small businesses, I would agree that it's the data, because there's a lot of work that comes into that. Is the IT team can easily come in and say, Social Security's credit card numbers, that's all encrypted, or it's a PII, PHI, if you're healthcare. Those acronyms are covered on the other one, so I'm not going to go deep into that. But for those, you have to set up full like data disposition frameworks, right? Is who are the owners? Who are the custodians? What are the requirements? What are the data retention policies? And you do that by like department too, right? So IT is going to have different data than accounting, which is going to have different than finance, which is going to have different than sales. And so you have to really start mapping it out and then putting all the processes and procedures in place up at the highest level of this engagement. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of talking. That's a lot of meetings. No one wants that, right?
Right. Well, and then some other nuance, and this I was going to make this analogy on networks as well, but one of the nuances that you're tending to see is shadow IT to some degree or another, as people are in your organization are trying to find ways to improve what they do in day out, they tend to go explore new tools. And if you're not doing that continuous inventory of software data in this particular instance that I'm trying to get to, is you're never going to be able to get your arms around it. You have to know what those connections look like. And as they're exploring stuff, they're more than likely didn't go to Nate and say, hey, Nate, I want to go look at this new CRM solution, whether I've got approval to do so or not. And as I'm doing this, what considerations do I have to have? That's probably not happening. And you probably could have used that analogy with ChatGPT too. People are testing stuff and the data is coming and going, and you kind of need to have an idea what that is. And it's continuously expanding, which is where I was going with networks too, is all the SaaS, the platform tools, they just continuously expand. There's good reasons for them. I'm not discouraging that at all. It's just a lot, and it's hard to get your arms around it. You need to be able to do that. So again, at this level, you've got the tools in place. You're doing the monitoring. You're getting the alerts. You're having the right conversations. You're having the meeting that nobody wants to have that says, hey, time out. This is where compliance really starts to get the bad name, as people start going, you can't just do that. You need to talk to me first.
Mm-hmm. Marketing. Just kidding.
Wow. Just
your marketing team loves all the fancy tools. So
it makes their jobs easier.
Yeah, we love our marketing team.
Oh
so.
My gosh, yes. That's awesome. So when we look at all the stages we've talked about, which transition do you think would be the hardest? Does that make sense? Is it stepping into traditional? Is it going to advanced? Is it coming up to optimal? Where are people going to get caught up the most?
It's either going to be the jump from initial to advanced, or advanced to optimal. Sorry, I'm on this Mac, so you get the balloons again because I talk with my hands. For those that are listening, I'm on a Mac. The balloons pop up when you hold up two fingers. So initial to advanced or advanced to optimal. And the reason why is I think there's two different reasons. Initial to advanced is going to be budgetary constraints, because when we talked about moving from initial to advanced, a lot of tools are being introduced, which means expenses, right? There's licensing that has to get included within there. You start to transition from labor expenses to licensing expenditures as you're moving into that automation component. So there's a bit of a trade-off, but you need to plan ahead to accommodate for the licenses and the initial investment to actually put the tools in place, because you still have the labor for a little bit. So it's an investment into your business at that point. Then from the other component is the advanced to optimal, I think, is a big challenge, not necessarily for the budgetary constraints, but it takes a lot of labor and user training and Todd delegating all the user issues, which swamps me down. Right. But those are the things that you have to consider when moving up to the optimal stages, the friction and changing culture at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah. I would say to me, it's optimal. And the reason being is it's a big step, but you can get big chunks and big advantages from advance. And I did want to highlight what Nate's saying is, while there is an expense associated with it, there usually is an ROI that comes back too. So there's several different ways to do it. The easiest one typically is you've freed up the labor. So when I was talking about earlier, I was, as an admin, your life gets easier. There are components that you can basically automate the things that you don't need to do day in and day out that take an enormous amount of time. But with optimal, there's big steps. The tools are great, but they take a lot of attention as you're getting them in place and validating them. And as Nate said, you do occasionally create some friction with users, which has you doing some, you know, one step forward, two step back, which is a little unfortunate, but it is a big step. So just briefly, as I don't want to discourage anybody from feeling like they can't go to advanced because the cost is going to kill them. It's not. You just have to be conscious on how you sell that internally. And then I will just kind of talk out of both sides of my head, because I can do that on a podcast. It's my opinion. I still want to emphasize that identity first step is a beast, because you do have to get rid of all the old connections, all the legacy. And it's absolutely 100% worth it. But you got to do it, right? You have to do it. And it is a big step, because you got to get rid of all that legacy stuff you've been living on and building around for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Just to kind of ride on that one more time is, I think we started the whole conversation about the castle mentality all the way down at the traditional level. Was the old stuff was the castle mentality. As more and more solutions are moving to cloud-based solutions, it's no longer the walls of your building that are the perimeter. Identity is the new perimeter, because it's always the person that's accessing something. All the tools, the networks, the data, everything falls after that, right? And so to Todd's point, it's hard. There's some big changes because, again, people, I don't know if they still hate multi-factor. Now that everyone's been forcing it on them, it's now kind of a part of the normal life. But back in 2015, 2017, all that type of stuff, people hated multi-factor. I still find organizations that exclude their executives because the executives say it's too much work, I don't want to deal with it. And then which are the accounts that get compromised?
And the most heavily attacked ones. It's the worst thing you could do.
Littered dinner on it last week and I found one. So
so the silly question is, do we end here? And of course, the answer is no. So where do we go from here? You know, you're at this optimal stage, if you can reach it and if you can kind of get there. Is it continuously growing and changing? Is there going to be a step that comes after? What's sort of that next part?
Yeah, I love that you use continuous, because I was going to say it's CICD, which is continuous integration, continuous development. And that is kind of the way of the world, especially in IT. So much changes so frequently in IT, which is largely why nerds like myself and I won't call people like me get engaged in technology in general and cybersecurity, is things are going quickly. We like the change. We like the challenge. We see the future and it's really exciting to us. But because of those things happen, things do change and you end up taking a left turn when you hadn't really anticipated it. Now you can start to look ahead a little bit, but the reality is things change. And what's really driving the massive change on cybersecurity is the threat actors. They're the ones that are going, okay, how can I find a new novel way of attacking? Now that they're doing this, now what? You know, and that could be anything from it's the concept's still weird to me, but we had a chat about this earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week, where people were getting QR codes emailed to them and people are scanning them instead of clicking the link because they're starting to do a much better job protecting links. I'm like, why would you pull your phone out and scan a QR code? That makes no sense to me. What happens if you got the email on your phone? What would you do? Anyways, things like that are constantly coming. And so because they're happening, it causes people like us to continuously move and change and see what's going on. And the world does change, so it will change a lot. The reality is the structure is in place. And so the changes that you'll make in the future, from my perspective, largely will be tools and process and procedure and less re-wrenching of systems. Now, will that completely change in 20 years? Yeah, probably. But I'll be retired by then and nobody will care about what I have to say.
Yeah. And to Todd's point, the CI/CD, to mine, it's going to be continuous risk evaluations. Is every quarter, go through a risk register. If you don't have a risk register, make one. Is saying, here's the strategic risks, here's the operational risks, here's the likelihood of the risks, here's the impact and the costs associated with implementing them, and just keep prioritizing it. You could have a weekly stand up and just say, is there anything new that we need to add into here? And maybe bump up on priority, right? But shifting those to continuously evaluate your security posture and risk posture within your organization. And then it just enables you to have conversations fluidly. And then one of the other things I'd say is be willing to give up your favorite tools. I think there's a lot of IT admins that are here going, not a chance. I love X tool, right? And it's been what I've learned for the last 20 years, and I never want to give it up. CIT, we reinvent almost our entire infrastructure every 3 to 5 years, right? Is in the past, obviously, it was a little bit slower as some of the tech was stagnant for a little bit. But as technology is continuing to speed up, we've swapped out tools. If you were at our tech fair last year, you would have seen this, right? We showed a graph, cyber defense matrix, showing here is our solution stack 3 years ago, and here's what it is today. And they're completely different. I have some of my favorite tools that I've had to give up, saying it doesn't meet our risk posture today for the investment, right? And we've given them up. I'm super jealous that a lot of our customers still get to use them. But CIT has moved beyond the needs of that tool these days, and we've taken in other tools along the way. So if you're on this journey with us, we know some of the struggles that you're going to face or challenges that you're going to face, because we've gone through it ourselves as well. So we can help you out there.
And I think you're 100% spot on. Things have changed enough that over the course of time, what you did before isn't necessarily going to be the answer. So the good old phrase is, what got you here won't get you there. And unfortunately, technology sometimes falls into that category too. I'm sure people still can do this without any problems, where the old phrase was, if you won't get fired for buying IBM and Cisco. And that's still largely true, but it isn't necessarily keeping up exactly where you want to go either. So as you look at how your organization gets dispersed, are you more cloud-based because you've got people across the country or globe? And does that old technology still match the need and help, as Nate mentioned, does it fit your risk appetite? If it doesn't, then you got to re-wrench and look at it and say, well, what does? How do we mitigate this risk? Is it worth the money, et cetera, et cetera?
And just for disclosure, we love the cloud. A lot of our customers love the cloud. We still work with a lot of people that are forced to be on-prem. So we work with you as well. So
yeah, and there is no wrong answer. I read recently there is a little bit of a current trend where people have really slowed the transition to the cloud and are reevaluating and saying, is it really what we thought it was? And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Make sure you go through your risk appetite and your process and your business impact analysis, to use another security nerd term, as you're going through these processes.
Yeah. For sure. Well, thank you so much, Todd and Nate, for joining us. It seems like we've kind of, for the most part, come to the end of our Zero Trust journey, but we will definitely be touching on this throughout the next few years. As you mentioned, some people haven't even started yet. Some people are going to be finding this months down the road. So If you need anything, please reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast, and we'll be back next week with an all new episode.